Hey everybody, Jason here. Before we get started, I don't think during this interview that we mentioned there's a free kickstart available in DriveThruRPG. So if you're curious about the product, you can go check out the free kickstart that has pre-generated characters and an adventure in it. So there's a link to that in the show notes. Okay, now let's get on with the show.
Well, pop yourself a beer or a cold libation. Let me tell you how I wrote this little theme. I went and took a call from brother Jason, and he tells me that he has a little dream. He says he needs a backwards intro to begin his podcast, and I ask him, what you got? He said, I'll start off with some talking and some moody clips of popcorn fighting, fantasy explorations and some groundless exploitation, kickstarts that I'm watching and some blind unboxing, full month horror movie marathon. Sometimes I let the dogs come on, contest and of course you know it's all about games. That's a slogan, let's just start with the name. It's the Nerds RPG Variety Podcast with the other Jason.
Welcome back to Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I'm your host, Jason. Today I have a special guest with me. John is joining me. You may know him from the Basic Expert YouTube channel and blog and products, and he's got a whole media empire out there. And he's got a new Kickstarter, and I'm backing it. I'm excited about it, and I want to get John on to talk about it. How are you doing today, John?
I'm doing very good. Thank you for having me on, Jason. I appreciate it.
Oh, great. So tell us, give us the elevator pitch.
All right. So this is White Box Rules. So it's very simple, classic D&D rules, reskinned in a Mesoamerican flavor. There's some rules changers as well. If you ever wanted to be a Jaguar warrior or an Eagle warrior or something like that, and engage with Mesoamerican mythology, this is going to be the game for you. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And I'll let you pronounce the title of it.
Makuhitl.
There we go. I have mush mouth. I can barely speak English, so definitely excuse me. So this is really cool because, this is a subject. There are a couple RPGs and supplements have kind of touched on it over the years, but not really. A lot, people have been kind of hands-off or maybe they just haven't taken the time, but you spent, 2 years at least doing research on this?
Yeah, 2 years doing research. I almost gave up on it. This almost didn't happen just because I got frustrated in the writing process of it all. But yeah, 2 years of researching, reading lots of books, and trying to learn as much as I could because I wanted to present the setting honestly. I approach it unflinchingly. As the Aztec, there's no watering down of anything in this book. The Aztec people are presented as they were, or as we know them to be. And it was rough going at first, but once I settled on White Box, because I've really come to love 0E. I've come to love those three little brown books. I think they're fantastic. They got a lot of stuff right in that first attempt at making this hobby, and it just started to click, and then that's when it started really rolling forward ahead at breakneck pace, and playtesting was going really well. So yeah, it's been 2 years on this project, and it means a lot to me. So that's why I'm doing the Kickstarter for a nice hardcover offset print, and not just doing print on demand, which is what I normally do.
Right. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm backing for that hardcover. It looks like it's going to be great. And I guess let's just real quickly before, because I want to talk about the game, and I that's the important thing here. But let's address the elephant in the room really quickly. Mm-hmm. Everybody out there wondering, well, why can he write this book? But this is your heritage, right?
It is. Yeah. I have the ancestry going back to these people. If my ancestors were not Aztecs, they were people that were conquered by the Aztecs. So I did one of those ancestry, genetic tests, DNA tests, and they can pinpoint like even to in Mexico where some of my ancestors were from, and some of them were like just to the west of Tenochtitlan, which was like the capital of the Aztec Empire. So if my ancestors weren't Aztec, they were people that were subjugated by the Aztec in some respect. But I will say that I don't think that gives me the right necessarily to do it. I think what's given me, quote unquote, the right to do it is that I've researched this, for, like I said, for 2 years, and I've tried to really do the best that I could to be as honest about not sugarcoating anything and just being historically accurate. And I think that's what matters. Intention, and you know, I'm not trying to play into any jokey tropes or anything like that. This is taken very seriously. And I guess if anyone could get away with it, I would be someone who could. But you know, I want people to look at this and be like, wow, this is cool, because he put a lot of effort into this, not because, oh, cool, he has the right blood in his veins, if that makes sense.
100%. No, I'm with you on that. I just wanted to get that out of the way.
Sure.
People ask, and it's one of those things. But and you mentioned the research. One thing, because you've done a live stream, I'll put a link to it in the show notes, but where you kind of do a flip through the PDF as it is, and you're doing minor revisions to it. But you have a big bibliography in there. Of your research material, so people can see and go to those source materials if they want to, or the secondary source materials to do further research if they want to.
Yeah, they can find all that stuff. I mean, I was one of the biggest books I used was it's called like the Handbook to Aztec Life or something like that, written by an expert, Miguel Aguero, I think is his name. I that might be wrong. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but. That book is like a massive book, but it's actually a really good book to read. And it's in the Appendix B, you know, which is like the historical references that I have. And yeah, so there's a whole, I list everything that I was drawing from there. I drew from some of the codices that the Spanish had, for instance. Like I have, there was a codice that I found doing research that covers like herbs and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, all the herbs for the herbalism in the game are directly derived from the codices that the Spanish had the natives do for them on like what are the plants that are in the New World here that you guys use. So you know, that's just me taking directly from the codices and being like, how can I gamify these herbs that they use, you know? So that's just an example of the, you know, kind of research I did. You can look up that stuff too once you get the book in your hands.
Right. And that's one of the things that draws me to this, because like I'm a big fan of Zero-E as well, or, you know, OD, whatever we want to call it, the little brown books. So, you know, I'll use the system as is. But even if somebody isn't playing that, you've got a big segment of the book that's quote unquote setting, but it's, you know, it's laying all the stuff out from mostly a historical point of view. So people want a source book to run a game, a Mesoamerican game. This will give them that as well, even if they're not going to use the rule set.
Yeah, you could look at it and be like, because you could, even if you're running not Zero-E, even if you're not using white box rules, the converting this to BX, for instance, would be super easy. Converting this to AD&D would be super easy. Converting this to Dungeon Crawl Classics or even 5E wouldn't really be that hard if you wanted to try and use it for that. And then, yeah, you could convert the classes, you could convert the setting material easily. Like the setting material, there's not much in the way of mechanics. It's all just in the setting part. That's all mostly just, it's a history. That's all. Chapter 7 is just like history book, you know? And I try to write it in a way that's engaging and interesting, so you're not bored, because I know some people don't like reading about history, but I try to present it in an interesting way and give you as a referee and even as a player all the information you need to know to feel like you could competently run the setting, you know, because I know that's a big worry with a lot of people. It's like, well, I don't want to butcher the setting. And I totally understand that. But I try to give you as much stuff as I can to make sure you feel confident in being able to do that.
No, that's awesome. Because like I know for me, sadly, my touchstone tend to be Western movies, right? Mesoamerican movies, which there aren't very many. So you're talking about things like Kings of the Sun with Yul Brynner, maybe Apocalypto with Mel Gibson, or even Q, Larry Cohen's Q, The Winged Serpent, right? But none of those are really great as far as the way it really was. That's Hollywood's version of the way it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And oftentimes history is like, even Hollywood sort of shies away from, it kind of waters it down a little bit. You know, they got to make it palatable to our modern sensibilities. And because that was a struggle making this was players are going to be doing things in this game as a a player character that an evil character would be doing in a traditional Western fantasy game. Like that these are, you're going to be doing things that player characters would be fighting against in most modern typical Western fantasy games, Western European inspired fantasy games. But to the Aztecs, obviously this was everything that your player characters are doing is heroic. You know, everything they're doing was for their city state, was for their emperor, was for the gods. And so you have to go in with that mindset. That was a struggle, but I just sort of went, you know, I just got to lean into it. Like if I water this down in any way, I'm not being true to the source material. I'm not being true to this culture. So I can't just water it down and be like, oh, well, you know, you don't have to do the human sacrifice stuff if you don't want to. You don't have to do this if you don't. Like it's just presented as is, and this is what it was. This is how it was. So,
right. One of the great things that you've done in here is you've made timekeeping so important, because the zodiac, and whether it ties into to like birth signs or ties into, you know, when you're requesting spells from your deity or whatever. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how that works with the days of the week and all that.
Yeah, so the Aztecs had a 260-day sacred calendar, and within that 260-day calendar, there are 13 phases. They were called tresenias, and these phases were, you know, each 13-day phase was a different sign, and each of those different signs reflected on you as a person, what sign you were not born under but named under. So your parents would name you under a particular sign, and then whatever day you got your name on, that was the day that, you know, fate would determine your future pretty much. So in character creation, you roll to determine what your zodiac sign is randomly. The Aztecs, you couldn't control what day you were born on. You're not going to be able to control what day your character was born on either. So you roll 2d20 across like a matrix, and then you cross-reference it. You get your day, and then you'll know what phase that you're born in, what zodiac sign you're born within. And you have 4 days that you can kind of shift things. So you can wait. Parents could wait 4 days to name their child in Aztec society. So you can wait 4 days, and that might not be enough. You might get stuck with a bad sign. And I've said this multiple times, though, I would encourage players, even if you get with a bad sign, don't give up. You know, it's a role play opportunity. It's a character. It's something that will set your character apart and make your character more interesting, even if they have something of somewhat of a handicap. And I do try to make the handicaps interesting and gameable. And someone had told me, like, some of your handicaps are almost desirable, is what someone told me, because it just makes it more fun. Mm-hmm. So I try to do that, and the same, so that affects character creation. Players get bonuses to like attacks. They get bonuses to reaction rolls based on this. They might improve an ability score. They might get an ability score penalized. They might get bonuses to saving throws based on the zodiac sign they're born under. So there's all these different things that will differentiate your character, little things based on your zodiac sign and the number day that you're born, because they also had sacred numbers and believe certain numbers were special. But for spell casting, if you are a Nwahali character, you have to petition the gods for your spell. So I do have the typical Vancian sort of spell slot system. I didn't want to change that. I didn't want to muck that up. But where I did change it was, it's kind of like a cleric where the Nwahali has access. Once you have level one spells, for instance, like you have access theoretically to all the level one spells. But you have to petition the gods for them. And there's a reaction roll, because I think reaction rolls are cool. I think it's a cool mechanic, and I wanted to apply it in a different way. So you have to petition the gods for a reaction with a reaction roll. The spell you're requesting, if it's, you know, in contradiction with the zodiac sign that's currently going on, this goes back to good timekeeping in game. If this goes against it, you know, there might be a penalty to the reaction roll. The gods, or the god that's predominant during that phase, or the gods themselves might be like, you know, that's not jiving with what we're doing right now. So -1 penalty to the reaction roll. So it might take you a couple hours in game time to get the spell that you want. It might be very quick. It might take you a couple days. You know, you might be sitting there like petitioning the gods over and over again, waiting for the right response from them to get the spell that you need. And that might irk some people, but for me, this was important because this is something the Aztecs did. Like, they consulted the gods for when to harvest, when to plant, and when to go to war. And it was sort of in for me, in line with that, where you're always trying to commune with the divine in order to suss out what you should do or what's available to you. And so I tried to make that into a game mechanic with spell acquisition.
Oh, very cool. And you have altered some of these game mechanics to kind of fit the setting better, right? Mm-hmm. So you've added things like exploding dice in there, and you modified the way the experience points work.
Yeah, I've completely changed. It's a different term. It's still technically experience points, but I call it status points in the game. And it's both your in-game currency for like acquiring hirelings, acquiring gear, acquiring property, the money essentially you earn in business, but it also goes towards leveling up your character. So the leveling ranges are much smaller, and when you spend your status points to advance your character, the status points are gone and your score, your status point value towards the next level resets back to zero, and you got to get a larger gap to get to the next level. Mm-hmm. And this forces players to sort of think about what they want to do. In playtesting, for example, my players had acquired some status points. They had done a good job of acquiring some artifacts for the Emperor. They had done some other, gone on some other raids and whatnot, and they had a decent amount of status points available to them. And so they came back into town, and they wanted to raid Texcoco, because I was running the game at a point when the city-state of Texcoco was not part of the Triple City Alliance. And they had to make a decision. They're like, do we want to spend our points on leveling up, or do we want to buy a war canoe and paddle across Lake Texcoco and take them by surprise? And so there was like this long debate between the players, like, what do we want to do? And I liked that. That was my intention when I designed it, is resource management. Like, it becomes, your experience points become a resource. And I did this because the Aztecs didn't really have gold coins. The old XP for gold system just wasn't going to work for this. The Aztecs prized like cloth called like a quachtli. They had cocoa beans. They had things called hoe money, which looked like these little axe heads that were like hammered copper, but that wasn't super common. And obviously they were a barter society as well. So obviously, like, raiding a village and rolling for corn and all that stuff wasn't the loot wasn't as interesting to me, so I just sort of abstracted it, and I think it streamlines the game a little bit more and still sort of keeps the flavor. And I guess maybe the most controversial thing that people might have with it is that, yes, you know, the Aztecs viewed in combat killing an opponent as wasteful. That wasn't, you, if you could take prisoners back alive, that was considered more heroic, and obviously these prisoners would be used as slaves or as sacrifice victims. Because we need to make sure the sun rises the next day. You know, Tanatua needs to rise the next day. So if you kill a human opponent, you get their base status point value for killing them. If you are able to bring them back alive, you get 5 times the status point value. So you get a lot more. And if there are like a powerful warrior or someone that's useful to your enemies, you might get a lot of status points for bringing back such a valued prisoner. And so it creates a unique situation where when you're playing regular D&D and you're bringing your loot back from the dungeon, you know, you have your gold and your gems and your artifacts and all that stuff. Generally, you're not worried about your gold getting up and running away and trying to escape. But in this, your loot is going to try and escape at any chance that it gets. So I encourage referees to, like, you know, these warriors, they don't want to go get sacrificed. They want to live to fight another day. So, your primary method of gaining experience is going to be capturing enemy soldiers, enemy warriors as war prizes. But also those guys are trying to escape as you're trying to bring them back. And the number of prisoners you can hold is going to go against your charisma score of followers, because you're managing people. So now the player has to make a choice. How many followers do I want to have? Because I want to leave room for prisoners. You know, and if I have a low charisma score, I might not be able to take as many prisoners. But, you know, it just creates for, again, interesting decision making that players have to make, and it creates a situation where players probably have not experienced it before in D&D as well. Again, like your primary mode of XP of leveling is trying to get up and run away from you at any chance that it gets. So it can become quite fun still.
Oh, no, definitely. And it's just one of those things that it's accepting the setting for what it is. And, and as people in the 21st century in America, or wherever in the world my listeners are, we have our thoughts, but we weren't there. And it's not our place to judge what their society did. And this game is trying to present it, like you say, honestly. And I could see. So back in the early days of the EOSR, there was a controversy with McKinney's Carcosa because it had some of the same things going on in there. And that's kind of died down now, I think. And most people look at Carcosa as an interesting system where you do different now Lamentations, Raggy prints it now, but because he has interesting dice mechanics in there and different things. And so it's kind of lost that. It took a little while for people to accept that there's just something a little bit different, but it doesn't have the stigma it used to have. And really it's just a matter of people not, coming at this with preset ideas and accepting the game on its own terms,
Yeah. It's for fun. It's not real, right. This is based on reality. These things really happen, but at the table itself, this isn't real, And for me, you were talking, there's not a lot of content out there. There's Mestika, and there's not much else. I can't remember Toa Khan or whatever, the dungeon that is sort of like a Mesoamerican flavor that was an old module. There's that, and there's not really much else that I've seen. If there is, apologies to that creator. But it's not like Western fantasy, for example, where you have a plethora of things to choose from and settings to pick and choose from. Just from official D&D settings themselves, you have more than enough to keep you occupied for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. But with this, it's definitely, I guess that's what drew me to it, was that it's different and unique. And it gave me an opportunity to sort of hack the rules to be something that I hadn't seen yet, at least not this way.
Right. And we should make it clear for folks that aren't familiar with you and your work, this isn't your first game. You've got two other successful and very interesting games out there. You've got a post-apocalyptic game and a Western game.
Yeah. So, that's one thing one criticism I've heard people say, he's a new creator. I don't want to back someone who's not delivered on anything before. It's I have two full books that I've released. I finished, there's Cowpunchers, which is a D6 dice pool game, which is it's another, I kind of have a thing for history. I like history. It's just a straight Western. It's not Weird West. It's not anything. If you just want to play a historical Western, or maybe you want to do something more Hollywood, a spaghetti Western, but still kind of grounded, mm-hmm. you could use the Cowpunchers rules for that. It's a D6 dice pool game. You roll as many dice as you can. You try and get fives and sixes. It's really simple. And then I have Atomic Punk 2160, which started as a BX hack. And then I sort of just mushed BX, 0E, and Traveler together into a single game, because I love Traveler. Classic Traveler is another one of my favorite games. I have an original box set that I scoured eBay for because I just had to have it. Instead of 2D6, Atomic Punk uses 2D10, because 2D10 has a really nice pyramid, really nice bell curve. Target number 11, and you have classic Traveler style attack matrices on it and everything. I'm into that kind of stuff. So I've delivered all this. I've delivered two games before. So if you're skeptical, I do finish things.
Well, and the PDF is basically done. So yeah. and you're going to deliver the PDF prior to the print products to the backers. Is that?
Yeah. Right? The moment the Kickstarter closes and I can get everyone's name in the book as backers, it'll go out to everyone that supported it. So at the various tiers. So you'll get it pretty quick. Right. Shouldn't take long to do that.
Yeah. I will apologize to you in front of the listeners, and I can edit this out if I need to. But so I said I wasn't going to do gotcha questions. I didn't ask you about this before, but one thing I've seen some projects do good and other projects not do super well is when they have a print product Are you planning to immediately send the book to the printer, or is there going to be a like a small window where backers get the PDF, they can give you feedback prior to the files going to the printer?
I've been thinking about that, and I think it probably would be wise to get some feedback, because you guys as backers are going to get, you're going to find, I've scoured this PDF over and over again, and I've had my playtesters look over the PDF, but you know, I have almost 300 backers at this point, 273 looking at it right now, like 273 eyes on that will be much more useful than from spelling errors and all that kind of stuff, grammatical stuff, than my small sample size that I have now. So I think it probably would be wise to give it like a month or two, maybe a month, a couple weeks, to let people look it over and kind of soak it in, and then get back to me on, hey, there's this, you know, page 54, you spelt this wrong or something like that, or what does this mean over here? Like, this doesn't make sense, you know. So I probably will go that route. I think that would be the safest bet to make sure that the final print product is good, professional, as professional as I can make it.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. And I apologize if that was kind of out of left field. It was just, I forgot to ask that ahead of time, but that's definitely one of those things with Kickstarters, because you pay all this money for a printed book, and then you get it with typos and things. Now, we should mention, that's one thing, you know, this hardcover, now shipping is going to vary depending where you live and all that. Mm-hmm. But the offset hardcover it's $38 for the tier. I mean, and it's how many pages?
Right now it's 173.
Right. So most Kickstarters, you're paying a lot more for that your product. It's very reasonably priced.
Yeah. It's getting printed in Lithuania. I have a friend who did a product called Chronicles of Iris, and he's used them for all his books, and his books look really good, and they gave him a great price. They gave me a great price. It's sad that I couldn't get it printed in the United States. I wanted to get it, you know, made in the USA, but US printers didn't want to talk to me. So these guys, at least it's not printed in China, I guess, but these guys gave me a very good price. And even with shipping it, importing it from Europe into the States, it's still cheaper than what I've seen some people are getting. And it's going to be a nice book. It'll be black cover with foiling on the cover, kind of like what's behind me with the sacred calendar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nice paper inside, and Smith sewn with a ribbon. So I love having the ribbon bookmark in there too. So it'll be a nice book.
No, I do too. I'm very excited for it. There are multiple tiers there, but it's such a, you know, like I say, it's a great price point. And the art in there is great. And I guess, you know, we skimmed over this. We didn't talk about your history with the hobby, which I should have opened up with, but you know, you're an artist, and which gives you the advantage, because most of the art you can do yourself, but it's great art. It's very evocative, and it feels right for the setting that you're portraying here.
Thank you. Yeah. So I went with some black, white, and red as far as like the color scheme inside the book. I went kind of still old school though, because I like black and white ink drawn illustrations. So I went with that. And I have my more typical inking style in there, which is kind of like a slightly loose, you know, semi-realistic illustrative style. But then I also tried to I redrew some art from the codices, the actual codices, art that was inspired by it. If I couldn't find a direct one that I could redraw, I just looked at the codices and like, well, it probably looked like this. We've tried to be inspired by it at least. So I try, like in the monster section, the monster illustrations are in this like the sort of old illumination style that the Nahuatl people did inside the codices, where they drew warriors and people. And it's also all throughout the book too. There's a few public domain pieces in there, but they're not in there because I needed the art necessarily. I just thought they were super cool. Some of that old art from like the 1800s is like really cool. And there's a few interesting pieces of art where they drew like some artifacts and things like that, or statues. And I was like, that just looks so cool. I have to put it in my book, and it's free, so I might as well put it in there. But probably 98% of the art is drawn by me. So
Oh, very cool. Very cool. So with this, I know we kind of skim past, we're not doing a deep dive in mechanics or any of that, but are there any questions about the project that I haven't asked that you wish I'd asked, or are there anything that about the product you want people to know that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I think it's going to be, it's going to be a game that you're going to read it and you're going to feel at home and familiar with the mechanics. I'm not like completely reinventing the wheel here, but I'll 100% say that. But I pretty much where White Box doesn't really fit the setting, that's where I manipulated things to fit the setting. And the beauty of old school, I think, is that unlike modern editions where everything's all interconnected and there's a lot of moving parts, and if you take one thing out or change one thing, like, you don't know the butterfly effect that you've caused for systems down the line. 0E and BX and AD&D are not like that at all. And so it's so easy to just change something and you're not going to break the game. It's bad. It's right. Easier to see what you broke. So, it will be familiar, but it will be different and unique. And I hope people, you know, if you don't want to run it as a straight historical setting, but maybe you want to pop like an Aztec culture into your homebrew setting or something like that, like, this can be a good resource for you. So, yeah. Oh, and I know one thing people are concerned about is pronunciation. You've mentioned that as well. Like, oh, I don't want to butcher words. I do have a little section on how to pronounce words, and I do have a glossary at the back as well that shows phonetic pronunciations of common words in the Nahuatl language. So that for things like makuhitl, how to pronounce that, and then you see the phonetic pronunciation. So if you look at the beginning and you look at the end of the book, you can start to figure out how to pronounce these words, and with practice, if you care, you can get pretty good at it. So I know that was a concern for people, but I try to make the book, because this is an alien culture, this is an alien setting for a lot of people, I try to make it as easy for you to take in as you possibly can.
Yeah, talking about making it easy, one thing we didn't mention is the PDF is hyperlinked, right?
Yes.
You have PDF set up, yeah, like a modern PDF.
Yeah, yeah. I know I mean, obviously you can control F if you really need to do something, but I have an index in there. The index is hyperlinked, and then I have the table of contents is hyperlinked. If I reference a page in the book and it says like, oh, for more info on morale, click on page 43 or whatever, or go to page 43, like, you can click the 40, you can click it and it will take you to the appropriate page. So I wanted to make it easy for people to do that, because I know I appreciate that when I see PDFs hyperlinked. When I buy a PDF and it's hyperlinked, I'm like, yeah, thank you.
No, definitely. Very cool. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time out to come on the show and help me promote your product. I mean,
I appreciate you having me on. And, you know, I want to say I was really humbled by like people like you and other people that have backed this thing too, you know. I'm still kind of a nobody, and you know, this is like a niche within a niche within a niche, and people are supporting it. And when I woke up after one day and it was like over 50% funded, I was like blown away, because I not that I expected it to fail, but again, it's a niche within a niche within a niche, and you know, so I'm just like humbled and grateful that people are interested in this thing that I've made. I don't know how else to describe it, I guess. I'm just thankful.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I would also encourage people to look at your other things. I'll admit, I haven't actually looked at your other two games yet. I plan to. I just recorded a podcast on Albert Pun's Radioactive Dreams, a kind of post-apocalyptic movie. And I'm kind of curious now to look at your game to see how well that's going to model that. So I'm curious for that. But the other thing you have up in some of your, and I could be wrong in this, maybe it's on your blog, but you have, because you're into solo gaming as well, right? So you have some solo traveler stuff up and some other stuff.
On my blog, on my website, where you can buy a lot of the stuff too. If I know some people don't like DriveThruRPG. As a creator, I don't... I don't really like the back end of DriveThruRPG is so hard to use, but I have, you can get print on demand on my website too, thebasicexpert.com. But yeah, I have a blog on there. I loved solo gaming. Solo gaming is to me like just as valid a method of interacting with a hobby as sitting at a traditional table, in my opinion. I get just as much fulfillment out of both modes of play. But yeah, I've talked a lot about that on my channels too. So if you're into solo gaming, I might have some stuff for you.
We'll have links in the show notes, folks. There'll be a link to the Kickstarter and a link to, you know, whatever John sends me, I'm going to link in the show notes. So we'll have all that down there for you. Check it out. The project, this, I'm actually going to publish this on September 13th and the project ends. You still have like 20 days. Do you know what date, the actual date it ends?
I have 25 days to go. I think it's like okay. October 9th or something like that. It's the last day.
Okay, so plenty of time to get out there and back it. It's almost, you know, fully funded now, the last time I looked. And, you know, even if you're somewhere where getting, you know, that they can't ship the book to you, you can still get the PDF. And, you know, it's going to be a great resource. Even if you never played it, it's going to be a great resource. But I'm looking forward to getting it to the table. So
I appreciate it. Yeah. Again, I'm humbled that everyone's excited about it. Because, again, I wasn't sure. You know, is this... Like I said, there's not much stuff out there for it. And it's like, is it because no one wants it? Or I don't know. I kind of had to take a step off the edge there a little bit to see what it would be like.
but when you have a passion project, sometimes you just have to do it. And
yeah,
even if you're only doing it for yourself, you have the satisfaction of doing it, but thankfully you're sharing it with us, which is great. Yeah. So awesome. Well, thank you very much. And you know, we'll be watching. I'll be watching for what you do after, you know, for fulfillment of the project and then what you do next.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. One last time, I'm going to thank John for coming on the show. That's all I'm going to do today on this show. Instead of a System Sunday this coming Sunday, what we're going to have is a call-in episode. So I'll catch up on calls. And then next week for Talk Like a Pirate Day, I've got a special movie review where Minion, also known as Rob from Confessions of a Wee Timorous Bushi, joins me. I will see you Sunday for a mailbag episode, and then back next week for a special movie episode. Speaking of movies, time is running out to send your thoughts on Lady Hawk in. Every month we pick a movie and we watch it. Everybody watches it. They send in their thoughts on the movie, and then I do a show where I compile those and play them together. This month's movie is Lady Hawk. And the deadline for that is coming up quickly. I need your thoughts on Lady Hawk by the 22nd of September, Friday the 22nd of September. All the ways to send them are in the show notes. So you can send emails, you can send it to SpeakPipe, to Google Voice. There's a bunch of ways to reach me. It's all in the show notes. But send in those thoughts on Lady Hawk. That episode will be published on the 25th, but I need your entries by the 22nd. Speaking of deadlines, my contest, the Fish Out of Water contest, where you call and tell me your favorite fish out of water story where the hero is totally out of their element, and this could be a movie, a book, a game, whatever, your entries for that are due by September 27th. September 27th. And unlike Lady Hawk, the Fish Out of Water contest does have prizes. You can submit all your entries all the same ways, so get those in. But until then, be excellent to each other. Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Who's on the phone? Maybe it's your auntie or a joke about your spouse, but the operator's screaming it's coming from inside the house. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, the audience is pretty sure he took a pretty head, and the only question left is if the fiddle shoot him dead. Bring on the gold, bring on the gold. I want some more, bring on the gold. Well, your butcher is a dustman and your moil is by the tipper, and I'm assuming that your partner back there in the wood chipper. Don't look away, don't look away, don't look away, don't look away. Well, the zombies are arising and the world has gone to heck. We're living for the dying and we're dying for the train wreck.